morning, everybody. 6 past the hour. This is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Do not fear. It's Dan Pashman here with Brendan McDonald. How are
good
you,
morning,
Brendan?
Good morning. How are
Chris
you, Dan?
Chris LaPresto is in the house, manning mission control over there. Mark Maron and Mark Riley continue to be out, but they will I'm sure they will be back next Tuesday. Do not fear. And I'm pleased to report, you know, Brendan got a little worried. I wasn't here in the studio about 30 seconds before we were going to go on the air. Now, yesterday at the start of the show, I had a little problem with a bloody nose. I blew my nose a little too hard.
A little problem is understatement.
It got a little messy here in the studio, although I want the record to show that I remained on the air while bleeding.
Right, during a gusher.
Yeah. Now, on conservative talk radio, they don't do that. All right.
Right. We know that for a fact. That was the most specious comment we've said yet on show this week.
They may start bleeding, Brendan, but I'm saying that, you know, they throw in a highlight reel and they run to the doctor.
Okay.
We stick it out here at Air America.
All right, I get you.
All right. But, you know, the reason why I wasn't here is because I had to blow my nose again, and I had to do it very carefully and delicately because I did not want to provoke, you know, another deluge.
Right, especially, you know, we have a lot to get into today, and we have a big show. It's the last day we're going to speak to Cindy Sheehan from Crawford.
That's absolutely right, and you know, she's been just such a great inspiration to all of us, and we're excited to speak to her again. And we also have some big news regarding a possible face-to-face meeting between Morning Sedition and Cindy Sheehan that could be taking place sometime next month. We'll start to break that. Maybe we'll give some hints about that later on in the show.
That's right, and we're also in just a moment here going to get into some of the aftermath of the big Hurricane Katrina down in the Gulf States. But I just wanted to say very briefly that we did get some news just before we went on the air that a real tragedy in Iraq. More than 635 people are now believed to be dead, and many hundreds more injured in northern Baghdad because of all things, of all the terrible things that these people have had to face in the last decades.
Right.
This is because of a stampede of people who ran away from a falling bridge railing from a bridge over the Tigris River. They were heading to a Shiite shrine, and just mass hysteria started because of this collapse. And now we know that at current count, 635 people dead. It's a real disaster, and our hearts are there with those people right now, as well as with the people in the Gulf States, as we're getting more information about what's going on in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah, it really is disturbing, Brendan. I feel like with this hurricane, we were geared up for it before it happened, and then you get the initial reports in the hours after it happens, and our natural assumption is, well, this is as bad as it's going to be right now in these few hours in this first day. But as it turns out, it's actually gotten worse.
Right.
It got worse yesterday than it was on the day of the hurricane. We had some serious problems in New Orleans with the levees. You know, as many people know, New Orleans is below sea level. They have these levees, basically giant walls and barricades that keep the water out from flooding the city. Well, these levees, many of them have broken as of yesterday because of the water pressure. And now, what is it? So 80% of the city of New Orleans is underwater.
Yeah, and the flooding's just getting worse by the minute, actually. I mean, this is not a problem that has stopped.
Right.
It's still coming
getting worse.
The governor of Louisiana, Kathleen Blanco, declared that everyone still holding out in the city has to leave.
Right.
How is it possible? I mean, I'm not putting that on the governor. I'm just saying this is extraordinary circumstances that these people face. They have to leave a city where they're swimming through.
Yeah. I mean, I was just telling you before the show, my good friend Jeff Bench, who lives down in Houston, Texas, I was talking to him yesterday, and he told me that in Houston, which is a 7 or 8 hour drive from New Orleans, excuse me, the sides of the highway on I-10, which is the interstate that runs from Florida to San Diego, I think, runs right through New Orleans and through Houston. The sides of the highway have been turned into shanty towns in Houston.
Just along the side of the road?
Along the side of the highway that runs through Houston, people just drove out there when they were fleeing New Orleans and basically just parked on the side of the highway and set up tents. They have nowhere to go.
Well, those that have been displaced from the three Gulf states, Louisiana, Mexico, Mississippi, and Alabama,
right,
are being told that it could be weeks, even months, before they're all allowed to go back to their residences. More than 1 million people remain without electricity across those three states, some without clean drinking water.
It's true.
Which is disastrous. And also, the Superdome in New Orleans is being evacuated. Governor Blanco said that it must be evacuated. Water is rising up. It's not safe conditions. There are thousands of people in there. They were bringing more people there after the storm had passed because because things were failing in hospitals.
Right.
So they were bringing people into the Superdome. Now that has to be evacuated. They said within the next 2 days it will be emptied, but they're still not sure where they're going to put all the people.
That's right, Brendan. And later on in the show, we're going to get into some details about this, because as horrible as this is, and obviously we all know you can't prevent every disaster to the fullest extent, but there are things you can do to prevent situations like this, and there are measures that officials in New Orleans have wanted to take and have been pushing for in terms of strengthening the levees, in terms of precautions for a disaster like this, that they have wanted to take, and they have been denied the funding, and in some cases funding has been taken away that had been promised to them by the Bush administration because they needed money for the war in Iraq, for the war on terror, and because of tax cuts. And we're going to get into that in a little more detail later on in the show.
And that this, all of these cities and towns do need money, and we're going to encourage people all day to just go to the Red Cross. I mean, there's a lot of different places where you can give your money and give assistance. The Red Cross is saying, you know, we don't need goods right now. We don't really need your services. We need money.
Right.
We need you to send money, and we need to get this money into these cities and towns in the Gulf States as soon as possible. I mean, we got emails from people down in WSMB, our affiliate in New Orleans, who are not running our signal on the air right now. They are taking the one feed that's coming out of New Orleans right now, WWRL.
Right.
But we got emails from them saying that all of the electrical poles in the city are down. The entire city will need rewiring at some point, plus all power stations need rebuilding. That's going to take months to complete and get these people running in full capacity down the line, and they're going to need money to get back in their homes. So you can donate to the Red Cross at 1-800-HELP-NOW. That's what we're suggesting is the best recourse, and you know, we say that we're liberals here, and we say that we have compassion for people. I mean, this is the time to put your money where your mouth is and just help people out.
It's true, Brendan, and those people do need help, and we'll get into some more details on that later on. But oil prices have gone back up. You know,
right.
For a little while yesterday, they were over $70 a barrel.
Yeah,
it came just down to 69 and change.
70, 85
right.
Yesterday.
But still a mind-boggling amount. The cost of gas continues to go up. It really is putting a squeeze on so many aspects of our economy, and it's especially going to be putting a squeeze. And frankly, I'm glad it's putting a squeeze on a certain group of people, and that's people who own SUVs.
Right, and we should let people know that oil prices will continue to surge and are expected to top $3 a gallon by Labor Day.
Jeez.
So you're making those plans for this long weekend coming up. You might want to think about doing stuff closer to home. And, of course, they're saying that the reason for this is extensive damage of the Gulf of Mexico oil platforms. When the pictures of that damage had been released, they think that that's what drove this surge of prices up. And indeed, the SUV owners are going to be feeling this, although not close to a million owners of SUVs from General Motors, because we received this story that GM is recalling 800,000 SUVs.
Wow.
And pickups. It's the 1999 to 2002 models of the Chevrolet Avalanche, Silverado, Tahoe, and the GMC Sierra, Yukon, and Yukon XL. This is in 14 states that they were sold, including here in New York and New Jersey, and most of them northern states, Connecticut, Maine, Massachusetts, Michigan. They're recalling these close to 1 million vehicles, and whenever I see this, Dan, it's a good red flag for me to go, wow, something must have really been wrong.
Yeah.
With those trucks and big cars, because we know that these companies do a cost-benefit analysis and say the cost of people dying and us paying out to those dead people's families,
right,
will be more or less than if we recalled all the vehicles. So if they're recalling close to a million vehicles, that's a big problem.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's got to be pretty bad for them to go this far. And, you know, if conservatives and their friends who run the major corporations of this country have their way, they will get what they call tort reform, or what we call restricting victims' rights.
That's right.
They will get legislation passed that will put serious restrictions on your ability to sue large corporations when they put out products like this that are unsafe. And there will be no repercussions, and there will be no recourse. There will be no penalty for corporations who put out faulty products, and there will be nothing that normal Americans who are victimized by those products will be able to do if corporations and conservatives have their way with tort reform, or as we call it, restricting victims' rights. But we're going to get going here. But, you know, Brendan, if you're out there, you know, most of the people out there, Brendan, I think it's been a tough couple of years economically speaking. You may be looking at the price of milk and the price of gas and the price of various things that you pay for. And it seems like all the prices are going up. And it seems like you're not getting a raise.
Right. And we talked about this week the staggering poverty in New Orleans that was brought to light because of this hurricane. Well, folks, it's not just New Orleans.
Right.
It's the whole country. And we're going to get into the poverty rate of America, which was released by the Census Bureau yesterday with some shocking, shocking statistics. That's coming up next here on Air America Radio. I'm Brendan McDonald here with Dan Pashman. It's Mornings Edition, 17 minutes past the hour.
MorningsEdition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningsEdition.com. Air America Radio.
Good morning. It's Morning's Edition here on Air America Radio. I'm Dan Pashman along with Brendan McDonald.
That's right.
Chris Lopresto in the house. It is 22 past the hour. We're in for Mark Maron and Mark Riley. We're holding down the fort till they return on Tuesday. We're also playing some Best of Mark and Mark clips here and there. And in just a few minutes, we're going to be playing Stephen Page from Bare Naked Ladies, who came by in the studio and performed live. We're going to replay that clip for you.
Which I'm looking forward to because I actually wasn't here that day. And Stephen Page, I was trying to figure out, maybe with the exception of Ben Folds, he might be the largest selling artist we've ever had come on the show, musical artist.
Bare Naked Ladies
went like triple platinum with Stunt.
So. Yeah, they're pretty huge, and he came in. He was a very pleasant guy, very smart. He talked music, he talked politics, he played a song off his new solo album, which is a pretty political song and a very interesting song, and we're going to get into that in the next segment, actually. But right now, we've got some other things we need to get into here, Brendan.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's I think that a lot of people out there, one of the things interesting with Air America and our listenership is there's a lot of people out there who feel like they're alone and feel like they're in the minority in a lot of ways. And in reality, they're in the majority in a lot of ways. And if you feel like the prices around you are going up, like it's getting harder and harder to pay the bills, and yet your salary is not increasing with the prices around you, well, you know what? You're not alone. In fact, you're like most Americans. 1.1 million more Americans fell into poverty last year, which is actually an understated figure because the U.S. government uses outdated numbers to determine poverty stats. Incomes were stagnant. This is the first time on record in U.S. history that household incomes failed to increase for five straight years. Median pre-tax income was at its lowest since 1997. Last year. Meanwhile, Brendan, income inequality, the gap between the richest Americans and the rest of us, was near an all-time high last year.
Right. Now, this is the Census's annual report card on the nation's economic well-being. And you know that four-year expansion that we've been told so much about?
Right.
Yeah, didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Didn't benefit any American households in the aggregate sense. The Census numbers show that the tax cuts passed by the president in his first term,
right,
which you know, have lifted the take-home pay for most families. The biggest tax cuts went to, no kidding, high-income families already getting raises.
Yeah, are we actually paying these people to do studies on this crap? I could have told them that.
Right, we've been telling them that since Air America launched.
No, seriously.
We're Robert Reich in here every month saying this.
I know, this isn't rocket science.
The report said that these cuts had failed to stimulate the economy, which, you know, I have a friend who works at the Wall Street Journal told me that, you know, any time I would let him say something to me about this, because I usually don't like to get in these conversations with him.
Sure.
But any time I would engage, you would go, but it's the tax cuts. They are helping. I do this every day for a living. I work at the Wall Street Journal. Those tax cuts are helping. Well, the Census Bureau says that you're wrong. Sorry, Phil.
If the tax cuts were helping, then people would not be in the situation that they're in today. You don't need to be a rocket scientist to look at what's going on in our country. You don't need to have a PhD in economics to look around and see that prices are going up and wages are not.
Right.
All right, it is not trickling down. The concept of trickle down is a myth.
Didn't we know that in 92?
Yes.
Wasn't that why we got that turd out of office?
Yes.
I mean, trickle down was something made up for rich people. And just the idea of it, it just sounds sleazy. Like, we're going to keep it all up here. No, here you go. Here's
right.
a little bit. It's trickling. It's trickling right. right down to you. But you know, Dan, I want to bring this kind of full circle to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
Because the hurricane, as I said, brought to light for a lot of people the staggering poverty in some parts of this country, and New Orleans being one of the worst, one of the poorest cities in America. A third of that population lives in poverty. That's close to 150,000 people, with close to 1,000 of them living in abject poverty, which means they make less than $8,000 a year.
Right.
And, you know, when you can't get money to live, how are you going, you know, just on a day-to-day basis,
sure.
getting food, getting milk, getting clothes, how is your city going to get money in, you know, projects that they need to survive a huge hurricane?
Right.
You know, where is that money going to come from? Well, we have a bit of an answer for you here. New Orleans had long known that it was vulnerable for a hurricane and flooding, and had made a deal with the federal government since the late 60s to get some funding and relief for hurricane and flood efforts. Yet after 2003, the flow of that federal money started dropping off and eventually just slowed completely to a trickle. And we have found out that the spending pressures of the war in Iraq, as well as Homeland Security, coming at the same time as federal tax cuts, is the main reason for this strain. And that's coming from at least 9 articles in the Times-Picayune, that's the paper in New Orleans,
right.
from 2004 to 2005, specifically citing the cost of Iraq as a reason for the lack of hurricane and flood control dollars. So when you see the images on TV of those broken levees, think that things could have been done to fix them.
That's right, Brendan. You know, when people hear the numbers that get thrown around, we talk about the budget, we talk about the Iraq War. I mean, right now we're spending $129,000 a minute in Iraq. $129,000 per minute. We've been on the air for 27 minutes. Get out your calculator and figure out how much money we've spent. But the point is that we hear these massive amounts of money, and it sounds like monopoly money. Normal people like us can't even comprehend what that is, but that is real money.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be around forever. There's not an indefinite supply, and when you cut that funding, it really affects real people.
$186 million a day could help cities like New Orleans.
And that's what we're spending in Iraq.
All right, we're going to be back with Stephen Page and Mark, and a little live performance from Stephen from the Bare Naked Ladies here on Air America. It's 27 past the hour.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. That's the music of Stephen Page. He's the front man for Bare Naked Ladies. And we're going to replay his interview with Mark Maron and Mark Riley in just a couple minutes. He came in and played live for us in the studio recently. I'm Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald.
Hello.
Chris Lopresto is here. It's 35 minutes past the hour. Hey, drop us an email. Sedition@airamericaradio.com is our address. Hey, oh, by the way, in the past minute, we spent $129,000 in Iraq.
Just really? That's it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was it. Our next live broadcast is going to be our biggest, best ever. We're going to be at the new school on Friday, September 9th. That's next Friday. We're going to have former Senator and 9/11 Commissioner Bob Kerry and The Daily Show's Stephen Colbert. We'll be there, plus Lawton Smalls from Planet Bush, Milf Cardinal Milfington from Rapture Watch. Next Friday, September 9th, at the new school's Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues. 6 to 9 a.m. We're really looking forward to that, Brendan.
Oh, yeah.
That's right, Mark Riley. And also, we're looking forward to the fact that later this morning, we're going to have our final conversation with Cindy Sheehan down at Camp Casey in Crawford, Texas, before everyone at Camp Casey there heads out on Bring Them Home Now bus tour,
right.
which is going to stop in Tom DeLay's district in Texas. It's going to loop its way around and into Washington, D.C. to follow President Bush, who, which we'll get into a little bit later on, has ended his vacation, which I put in quotes.
But Brendan, I thought it wasn't a vacation.
This is an interesting little mixed message we're getting here from the White House.
Yeah, anyway, we're going to call him on that. We also got a special package from R.E.M.'s manager.
That's right.
They sent us an advanced copy of R.E.M.'s brand new song. It's not available anywhere, but because they like us and we like them and we're Air America and we're cool, they sent us an advanced copy. We're going to play you an extended clip of R.E.M.'s new unreleased song, Permanent Vacation.
Right, in honor of the president ending his, quote, ending his vacation.
Right.
We know what kind of vacation he's really on.
That's right. So we'll stick around for that. That's going to be really great. But right now, we did have Stephen Page in the studio a couple weeks ago. He did perform live for us, Brendan. And you weren't here, so now you get
to hear
it. This
is new to me, right? So we're gonna listen to Stephen Page, Mark Maron, Mark Riley, and this song that Stephen's going to sing was off his new solo album, The Vanity Project.
Welcome to the show, Stephen Page. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. Thank you.
All right. Good morning.
So the Vanity Project, I enjoyed the record. Can I call it a record?
Can you still do that? I call them records.
You do?
There you go.
Weird. It's, I guess it's an H-ing. You call them records still?
Yeah.
I thought it was great. I thought it was poppy. It was fun. It was nice. It's a great record. Why the title Vanity Project?
Well, because for a few things. I knew that as soon as I stepped out of the comfort zone of Bare Naked Ladies, somebody would call it a vanity project anyway, so I had
to beat them to
the punch. A few things. One thing is what the songs are about, which is, in a lot of ways, vanity, whether it's vanity of our culture, vanity of men, and whatever else, but it's also about what is the point sometimes of standing in front of an audience and singing? When you start making music for other people, some of that is about your own vanity.
Oh, my God. I ask myself all the time.
Yeah,
I do comedy. I ask myself all the time. Have you had those moments on stage where you're looking out at the people and just like, what do they want?
Yeah, or why am I here and not just at home curled up in a ball?
So are those answers on the album then?
I think the questions are explored on the album. Whether there's answers or not, I don't know.
So this song you're going to do is called...
It's called Wilted Rose.
And that's about...
In 2001, we had in Quebec City... I'm from Canada. In Quebec City, they had the Summit of the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think Canadians think of themselves as some kind of a different breed. And it was a moment for a lot of us where we realized that we're no different from anybody else in the way that we were treating our own citizens, the way we were treating protesters at that summit. And the fact that we were willing to subvert our own values in order to impress foreign finance ministers.
The imperial powers.
Well, exactly. And sure. That's the stuff that we as Canadians, I think we thought for some reason we were above it, and we're not.
Okay.
And, you grow up with a certain thinking you have a certain set of values that really are just there for show.
So it was sort of a wake-up call for you.
A little bit, yeah. It was also a bit of a call to arms.
Okay, great. Well, let's hear that song.
I almost try to care. They built a wall to protect them from us all. We should have left them there. Revolution is the first to go. Rest is forced to stay. Shall I cast this out, this wilted rose? Yeah. No, no, no. Like Pierre Trudeau's walk out in the snow. Can it be time to leave? I spent my youth thinking people spoke the truth. Now it's hard just to think. Was I naive to say I do believe? But none of us sink. They sold us out and they sold us short. Now we're the ones who have to pay. Shall I cast this out, this wilted rose? No, no, no. Like Pierre Trudeau's walk out in the snow. Can it be time to leave? Don't go, you know. It's all the same to me these days, I swear. It's hard to care. First to go, the rest is forced to stay. Shall I cast this out, this wilted rose? No, no, no. Like Pierre Trudeau's walk out in the snow. Can it be time to leave? Don't go, you know. It's all the same to me these days, I swear. It's hard to care.
Yeah.
Stephen Page, the new CD, The Vanity Project.
That was a real protest song, a real revolution song.
Yeah, I have a soft spot for that stuff. I get all weepy with that stuff.
No, I thought it sounded great. Now, when you write, it's weird when you do a protest song or actual a revolution song. Do you think like, well, I gotta do the harp, gotta do the harmonica thing?
You know what? Yes, I think so. a little bit of the Dylan nostalgia comes in.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
Now, was that a debate? Was I missing something? Was that a debate with yourself about migrating out of Canada?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, the height of the Bare Naked Ladies' success and. You know, around that time, 2000 and so on, I realized I could live anywhere. I could live in the south of France. I could live in New York or LA or wherever I wanted to, London. What's keeping me there? You know, my parents live in Toronto, but otherwise.
Was it the health coverage?
Oh, I didn't need that stuff anymore. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you get a point where I could actually afford to go private with any of those kinds of things if those options existed.
Sure.
And you realize that there's something worth fighting for, and, you know, you guys have obviously figure that out in this country and you know, around the world. We have to fight for what makes us proud to be where we're from. And you know, we can't in Canada, I think there's such a willingness to talk the talk but never walk the walk, and it's gonna lead to disaster.
It was great having you. You know,
thank you.
And
appreciate
you coming.
Glad to be here.
Stephen Page from the Bare Naked Ladies with Mark and Mark. That was just a little while ago. It was the first time we had him on the program. Great to have a Canadian on the broadcast, and also a hugely successful, high-selling musical artist. I believe he's the highest-selling artist we've ever had on the program.
I think that's safe to say. He's big time.
Well, we're going to be right back here with more Mornings Edition with myself, Brendan McDonald, and Dan Patchen. We're going to talk a little bit more about President Bush's ended vacation, because there's some confusion in here as to whether or not he was actually
on vacation. Yeah, Brendan, I thought he wasn't on vacation. We'll clear this up later.
We'll clear this up. We'll also clear up what the press had to, what part they had to play in actually perpetuating this myth.
Yeah.
Also, we gave you some really bad news this morning about the economics of this country and the poverty level. Well, there is some good news for one industry that had a banner year. Better than any year since the year 2000.
Right.
And we're going to tell you what that industry is up next here on Air America's Mornings Edition. It's 45 minutes past the hour.
Mornings Edition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it, eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio is back. I'm Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald,
yeah.
Chris Lopresto, Mark Riley being channeled through the board. It is 50 minutes past the hour, and just in a few minutes we're going to have a taped conversation with future Mark Maron, so you're going to want to stick around for that. But, Brendan, we're getting a lot of mixed messages here about the president's vacation. Help me understand what's going on.
All right, Bush back in Washington as of yesterday. They say he went back to monitor the relief efforts after the hurricane.
I'm sure he's all over it.
But it's very interesting because last week we got this report from the San Bernardino Sun where the White House spokesman for the week, who is not Scott McClellan, they had their vacation spokesman on the road with Bush, said, quote, "The reason Bush is in Crawford, Texas is due to renovation of the West Wing of the White House. He's operating on a full schedule. He's just doing it from the ranch instead of from the White House. The only week he had off officially was this last week." That was when he went to Boise and to Arizona. Now, this was obviously very defensive of them because they were getting all this flack about him being on vacation for 5 weeks while people are dying in Iraq, while an anti-war protest is going on 5 feet from his house. A lot of real... clinched rear ends in the White House over the fact that the president had this, what they wanted to call, working vacation away from the White House, away from where the taxpayers pay for the president to be when he runs the country. Well, then we get this statement from the White House to the press yesterday. And what exactly did that say, Dan?
Well, they say that he's canceled his vacation to monitor the hurricane relief effort. Now, when it suits them, He's on vacation because it sounds good.
Now he's a hero,
right? Because it sounds good to say he canceled his vacation.
By the way, he was coming back on Friday.
Right. This is what I really want to get at, Brendan. And this is why Air America Radio is here. This is why we are important, because the mainstream media is asleep at the wheel. All right. Now all presidents spin. All right. All presidents have their PR people. That goes across all parties. But the media and the press is supposed to hold them accountable and question what they get, the information that comes out of the White House. But the media now does not question what they get from the White House. They simply take it and turn it around and hand it directly to the American public without vetting it and without questioning it in any way. Now, we see a headline, "Bush cancels vacation to focus on relief." Okay? Now, if you're an average American, you don't watch the news every day, you don't read all the paper every day, but you see headlines here and there, you overhear things at the water cooler, you watch The Late Show, or you watch Letterman or Leno or whatever, and you see that, you're like, oh, what a great guy President Bush is.
It sets him up as a hero.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't say anywhere that he went on vacation for 5 weeks. 5 weeks, and he cut his vacation short by 2 days. On top of that, just last week he was saying it wasn't a vacation, that he was at work. So there should be no reason to say you canceled your vacation, because according to you, you weren't on vacation in the first place.
It also really sets up this idea of him going to Crawford and doing the equal amount of work. It's questionable if when something happens he has to go back to Washington and he can't remain at Crawford, well then is it really a fulfilling working environment for him to be doing this work at Crawford? I mean, we all know the answer to that. We knew that it was BS when they said it last week.
Right.
We're just trying to point out the gaps of logic. They're huge. And real journalists would be all over that. We'd be eating those things up. That's what real journalists strive for, is when those little kind of discrepancies turn up in a story, they go, oh, lunchtime.
Right. The president canceled his vacation, but last week you said he wasn't on vacation. And I mean, come on now. He was on vacation for 5 weeks. He cut short the trip by 2 days. Is that really all that heroic?
Right. And you'll notice the only time the press really gets like that and has that tone that you just had, Dan, is when they are attacked.
Right.
We heard that stuff coming out of the White House press corps back during Karl Rove's dodging and ducking and Scott McClellan's bobbing and weaving over why they couldn't say anything about the leak investigation. And that affected people in the press because they were lied to, and then other people in the press were going to jail because of that. And, you'll get some real impassioned questioning when that happens. But when they're given a line from the White House that doesn't really affect them, here you go, we'll just print it.
That's right. They have gotten very lazy and very complacent, and that is why Air America Radio is here, to set the record straight. Now, moving on, we got another very big, very disturbing story that, again, most of the media is going to completely glaze over. You're not going to hear about this pretty much anywhere else. It was buried in the papers yesterday. But the value of military weapons sales worldwide jumped in 2004 to the highest level since 2000, driven by arms deals with developing nations, especially India, Saudi Arabia, and China. This is according to a new congressional study. The United States once again dominated global weapons sales, signing deals worth $12.4 billion in 2004, or 33.5% of all contracts worldwide. Now, these people, Brendan, the Bush administration, who are selling these billions of dollars, the industries, you know, defense contractor industries donate a huge percentage of their money to Republican candidates and Republican parties. That's a fact. Okay, now these companies that make these weapons and the Bush administration, the people who front for them, the policymakers in Washington, they say that they're keeping us safer. That was one of the fundamental planks of Bush's run for office and many of the other congressional seats around the country, that the Republicans are going to keep you safer. Meanwhile, they've allowed assault weapons to be re-legalized in the United States of America, all right? And as we know, the terrorist training handbooks that we've discovered around the world specifically instruct terrorists in Al-Qaeda to take advantage of the loose gun laws in America. But now, they're selling more and more weapons to countries including India, Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, where 15 of the 9/11 hijackers came from, we are selling weapons to Saudi Arabia. Now, it is vital to understand that back in the 1980s, when Osama and his buddies were fighting the Soviets in Afghanistan, we sold weapons to Osama. And when Saddam Hussein and Iraq were fighting a war against Iran in the 80s, we sold weapons to Saddam. And in the Gulf War in 91, when we went in and we fought Saddam, we had our own weapons being shot back at us. And when we fight Al-Qaeda, when we fought the Taliban in Afghanistan in 01, we had our same weapons, we had our own weapons being shot back at us. And even today in Iraq, in some places, we have our own weapons, weapons that we built and sold to those people being shot back at us. And these weapons that we're selling right now to Saudi Arabia especially, but also to India and China, are going to be shot back at our troops. They are going to be shot back at our troops. Maybe not tomorrow, maybe not next month, and it may take years, but it's going to happen. And when you hear people say, oh, well, there's no one who's really pro-war, I say bull. There are some people who are pro-war. And these are the people who are pro-war, the people who make billions and billions of dollars from war, from selling weapons to other countries that we can't trust, that are going to someday take those weapons and turn them back against our troops.
And have a banner year in doing it. And this report came from the Congressional Research Service, a division of the Library of Congress, and it's considered to be the most thorough compilation on the details of sales of weapons and weapons manufacturing in the country. This is not some quack study going on here. And what Dan Pashman is saying needs to ring very true to every single person out there whenever we are in a conflict, the conflict that we're in now or any conflict that we're in the future.
We're spending $129,000 a minute in Iraq, and I promise you, not much of that money is going to our troops. It's going to the people who build these weapons. There are some people who are pro-war.
Well, I need some good news about the future, and yeah. I need us to think positively about what's going to go on many years from now, and hopefully we'll get that hope from Mark Maron in the future. It's Future Mark coming up next here on Air America Radio, 57 past the hour.
Good morning. It's 6 past the hour. It is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. My name is Dan Pashman. I'm here along with Brendan McDonald.
Good morning.
Chris Lopresto, keeping it real.
Good morning.
And we're here holding down the fort for Mark Maron and Mark Riley. They'll be back next Tuesday. For those of you who don't know us, Brendan and I are the senior producers here on Morning Sedition. Chris is the technical director, and usually we're mainly the guys behind the scenes. Today we're stepping out front and center. We're holding down the fort for Mark and Mark. We're also mixing in some clips of Mark and Mark, some of their funniest comedy bits and their best interviews of the last few weeks. And we're actually going to have a classic Future Mark Maron comedy segment in just a few moments for you. You can drop us an email at sedition@airamericaradio.com. That's sedition@airamericaradio.com. Also want to let you know, next Friday at the New School's Tishman Auditorium, next Friday, we're doing a huge live broadcast. Senator Bob Kerry will be there. The Daily Show's Stephen Colbert will be there. Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street between 5th and 6th Avs from 6 to 9 a.m. But, Brendan, right now we do want to bring people up to date. The sad truth about what's going on down there in the Gulf Coast, that what we all might have hoped and thought and assumed that the worst of it would be during the hurricane and in the immediate hours afterwards, it actually got worse yesterday. Tell us what's going on there.
It got worse yesterday, Dan, and it's getting worse now.
Right.
We all thought because New Orleans was missed by a direct hit from the hurricane that that city had fared better than was predicted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right now, flooding continues because of the broken levees in that city that have caused water to basically drain in at a steady rate and fill that bowl of a city up. The mayor of New Orleans, Mayor Nagin, is blasting the failure to patch these levees, saying that that is the problem for continuing destruction and chaos that's going on there. And the governor of Louisiana, Kathleen Blanco, has declared everyone is still holding out in the city has to go. Where they're going to go and how they're going to get out is still a mystery. And I'm not putting that on her as an error of hers. I'm just saying it's something that's probably insurmountable, this idea that all these people still have to leave, even though they're being faced with the rapidly rising floodwaters.
Right, the city is 80% underwater. It's pretty difficult to get anywhere.
The Superdome has been ordered evacuated. We know that that was a holding point for several thousand people who had stayed there during the storm, and then people being brought there after the storm for medical treatment and other needs that couldn't be met at local hospitals that were flooded. Well, that area has to be evacuated over the next 2 days, and it's still unclear where all these people are going to go. There's also unclear what the death count is along all three of the Gulf Coast states that were affected by this hurricane. Officials say it's simply too early to estimate a death toll. Engineers are still scrambling to plug those levees, and rescuers are still searching for survivors. A real morbid story is that there are houses throughout the Mississippi area, particularly in Harrison County in Mississippi, which is the home of Biloxi and the Gulfport, that has suffered about 100 known deaths at this time. They are painting the houses with swaths of paint to indicate that there are dead bodies in there, so that basically those houses will be passed by in the rescue effort. Very sad and morbid story there. Also, more than 1 million people remain without electricity across those three states, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama, some without clean drinking water. Those who are displaced have been told it might take weeks, even months before they're allowed back. And the American Red Cross is saying that this is going to be the largest response to a natural disaster in its organization's history. A spokesman for the Red Cross says that the agency will prepare 500,000 meals a day. That's in continuance with what we heard yesterday.
Right.
500,000 meals daily, and deliver them to people in the Gulf states, and as well as bring water. And water is really important right now because so many people are at a lack of clean drinking water.
Right. So many of the water supplies have been contaminated.
You know, if you want to help out in that gigantic relief effort here in the states, the Red Cross's number where they take donations is 1-800-HELP-NOW, and now is the best time to do it.
That's right, Brendan. And it's also important to note with these levees breaking that everyone knows now that New Orleans is below sea level, but it's also important to note that New Orleans has been sinking for quite some time because of erosion and other environmental factors, and everyone has known that this was the case, and they've been saying for many years that they need to build the levees up higher to counteract the sinking of the city farther below sea level. And they had worked out plans between the state and the city and the federal government. And the federal government, the Bush administration, pulled that funding, backed out on it, because they needed the money for the war in Iraq, for Homeland Security, and for their tax cuts. The war in Iraq, we now, as of today, we know is costing us $129,000 every minute.
Right.
You heard that correct. $129,000 per minute. And so you see the real effect of expenditures like the war in Iraq, because it has made the damage from this hurricane worse. And also, it's, you know, on a separate but related note, new poverty numbers came out yesterday. 1.1 million more Americans fell into poverty last year. Incomes were stagnant. First time on record in U.S. history that household incomes failed to increase for five straight years.
Right, and we had been talking earlier this week about the poverty levels in Louisiana and how that state ranks very poorly. It's actually in child welfare, 49th. Second only to Mississippi, which also got racked by the storm. The poverty in the Gulf states is crippling, and now we're learning that it is devastating the entire country, and the tax cuts that we were told would help did not help. And it makes me look at stuff on the news where pretty sensationalistic coverage of looting and police unrest that's going on in New Orleans right now. What do you expect?
Right.
You know, you have a city where one-third of the population is below the poverty line. what do you expect? You're not giving these people much of a choice.
That's right. And when you hear about a trillion-dollar tax cut, when you hear about $186 million a month in Iraq, when you hear these numbers, they sound like monopoly money, but they are real numbers. It is real money, and they do affect real lives.
Right, $186 million a day.
A month.
In one day.
$186 million a day. It's $5.6 billion per month.
Right.
$5.6 billion per month. Thank you.
And when you hear that, and then you also think about the fact that oil prices have surged above $70 a barrel, and that was yesterday, dropped down to about $69.81 at the end of closing, and that we hear reports that this weekend, the big Labor Day weekend,
mm-hmm.
prices at the pump are going to top $3 a gallon.
Yeah.
Money is not easy to come by in modern America. And it's getting a little scary, and especially when we're faced with situations like this in the Gulf states. And we're also asking people to help those people out with their own money. You can only hope on the goodness of people's hearts to get through situations like this. It's a scary situation. And when we have times of being nervous and tenuous about our future, we sometimes like to turn to future Mark Maron.
That was a good segue, Brandon. Well done.
Wow. I work my radio chops up for that, Dan. We sometimes turn to future Mark Maron to let us know what's happening 50 years in the future. And before Mark left, he got a call from future Mark. This was actually one of my favorites because it showed us something that happens in the future that we have going on here now, stand-up comedy.
Right.
And what kind of turn that takes 50 years from now. So let's hear Mark's conversation with future Mark.
Hey, man.
Yeah.
Sorry to bother you, but future Mark is on line one.
Great, I love that guy. Put him through.
Hey, buddy, what's up?
So, future Mark, what's going on in 2050?
I'm about to go on stage, man. I got a gig.
Oh, cool. So I'm still doing stand-up in the future.
Hey, just a sec. I got to put my body armor on.
What?
Oh, man, where's my shield?
Wait.
Crap. My gun's not even fully charged.
Whoa. Gun? Armor? Shield? What kind of stand-up are we doing here?
Well, comedy's gotten a little rougher in the future, Mark. Well, you know, actually a lot rougher.
Ladies and gentlemen, ill people and mutants.
Dude, they're shooting at you? How do you tell jokes like that?
Dude, stand-up isn't really about laughing anymore. It's pretty much a contact sport. Pure aggression, buddy. It's not bad, though. I get to shoot back.
You suck, air breather!
Dude, the Gill people are the most vicious hecklers, man. Nice one, Gill boy. I don't come down to your hydrogen synthesis plant and knock the f*** out of your mouth. God, is that all you got? Okay, so Dick Cheney III, what's up with that guy? Hey, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they found him grovel fluging with a Bronto dingle.
Dude, that killed. I didn't get it, but it killed.
Thanks, man. Hang on. Time's up.
You may now resume the comedy performance.
Ow!
Did that hurt, man?
You have to let the muses hit you, otherwise they get bored and you totally lose them. I've added a lot of injuries to my act just for them. Ah, nice one, Scratnazzer. Is that your girlfriend, or did you harvest an organic-based replicant from the carbon barn?
Again, I don't get it, but it sounded like a really good reference, man.
Thanks, man. Okay, it all begins with the writing. I better wrap this up. Hey, you've been a great audience. Please form a line in the front of the stage.
Form a line? What are you doing that for?
My big closer, man. They each get to punch me in the nads. I always get positive comment cards afterwards, and everyone goes home happy. Oh! Just one.
Oh, my God, man. I am so sorry. Hey, dude, I hate to ask you this right now, but do you have any advice for me?
Dude. I've got like 50 life forms lined up here to punch me in the balls.
All right, I'm sorry. Good point. All right, I get it. I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, later, man.
Oh, man.
Well, the future looks bleak, but we all need to laugh. That's an important part, is that
that's right.
even in a bleak future, we still need comedy.
It's true, Brandon.
All right, well, we got Dar Williams coming up in just a bit here with Mark and Mark, and Dan and myself, Brendan McDonald, are going to be here with you with the latest news, as well as some news that we just got about the strategic oil reserves. We will keep you up to date with what's going on with oil here in America. Coming up next here on Morning's Edition, it's Air America Radio, 17 past the hour.
Otasa katata matita. Hear my voice, idolaters, sucklers at the teats of beasts, and every guy named Ron in Hoboken. This is MILF Cardinal Milfington of Rapture Watch. Because I always want to know the latest on what Satan and his toad-licking minions are up to, I listen to the Morning Sedition Monday through Friday, every hubdominal, look it up, from 6 to 9 a.m. here on Air America Radio.
It is 22 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned in to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. I'm Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald and Chris Lopresto. We're holding down the fort for Mark Maron and Mark Riley. They will be back next Tuesday, and we're going to be playing a clip of them with Dar Williams performing live in studio in just a few moments. But right now, Brendan, we get some breaking news. Apparently, the Strategic Oil Reserve may actually be tapped.
Yeah, the Energy Secretary, Samuel Bodman, said today that the Bush administration will release oil from the petroleum reserves, and they say it's to help refiners affected by Hurricane Katrina.
Lie.
They're going to say they're going to announce the official announcement later today and how much exactly is going to be tapped. But, yeah, I don't buy it for a second. I mean, this is usually an excuse, a hurricane like this, to jack oil prices up, and it's only because public outcry about gas prices is affecting the poll ratings of Bush and company that we're seeing this action being taken.
Right, and the last thing they want is Labor Day weekend with pictures on the front page of every newspaper of $3 a gallon on the signs. That's not good for approval ratings. The price of gas is artificially inflated. There's no reason for it to be so high. They just charge that much because they know they can get that much. But we also want to get into some of the events out of Iraq right now, Brendan.
Well, one of them really unrelated to the Iraq war, although everything in Iraq is technically related to it because of the conditions of that country. Close to 700 people and many more feared dead, but close to 700 people officially announced dead at this point because of a stampede in northern Baghdad that was prompted when a railing from a bridge that went across the Tigris River collapsed. These people were all heading on a pilgrimage to a Shiite shrine. The railing collapsed, and reports now say that someone screamed that it was because of a suicide bomber, and then the stampede happened,
right,
and hundreds dead, many hundreds more injured. A very sad situation to go on with all of the sad situations that have plagued that country for decades. And you know, I take that back, saying that that's not related to the Iraq war, because it certainly is. If people are screaming that it's because of a suicide bomber,
right,
and causing people to get stampeded, a sad situation, especially compounded with the fact of knowing we had these reports today of exactly how much we're spending in Iraq every day.
That's right, Brendan. These numbers are really mind-boggling. The war in Iraq is now costing us $5.6 billion per month. Now, let's break that number down to really put it into bare bones. It is $186 million per day, $129,000 per minute. The war has cost over $700 per person in America. And just to make this absolutely clear how much money this is, I'm going to do a little illustration, a very quick illustration, Brendan. You ready for this?
Sure.
That was $10,000.
Wow.
$10,000 just now.
In that little blank space.
That blank space, we just spent $10,000.
Wow. Well, you know, this could be a big reason why the anti-war movement in this country is growing, because people are getting poor,
right,
and they want to know, why is all this money being wasted on a cause that we cannot yet figure out how it's being justified? There has been no answer to the question, why is this a noble cause? Meanwhile, all this money is being wasted, and we have people telling us, like the American Legion commander, National Commander Thomas Cadmus, who said last week that the American Legion is waging war against people who protest the war.
Right.
They said they're giving aid to the enemies of this country, and it was very encouraging to see this letter posted on the internet.
On BuzzFlash.com.
From Sean Lewis, disabled American veteran from the Persian Gulf War. And it was an open letter to Commander Cadmus and the American Legion. It says, I've been paying attention to all the good things the American Legion does. Community service, veterans advocacy, lobbying for veterans issues. I'm a member in the American Legion. I re-upped with my June paycheck. Despite the Legion's support for European fascism and Benito Mussolini 70 years ago, I felt those sympathies of the past were just that, the past. Yesterday, you proved me wrong. Now, he's referring yesterday to what Commander Cadmus said about war against anti-war protesters.
Right, and it wasn't just what he said. They passed a resolution.
Right. He says, I enlisted, trained, and fought with the ideal and willingness to protect and defend the rights of all Americans, not only the ones who agree with me. First among these rights, enumerated appropriately in the First Amendment of the United States, are freedoms of speech, of assembly, of association, of religion, and of the press. It is therefore with a heavy heart and a great anger that I must separate myself from the Legion's anti-American beliefs. By this letter, I rescind my membership in the American Legion. From this time forward, I shall do all that I can to spread the knowledge that the American Legion does not speak for me and many other veterans. Sincerely, Sean T. Lewis, disabled American veteran, Persian Gulf War. I agree with him, too, that, you know, the American Legion does advocate for some great causes.
Right.
But they cannot allow their leader to stand there and say that people who dissent with the president are anti-American and that they are at war with them. That cannot happen. And bravo to a great American, Sean T. Lewis.
That's right. The resolution the American Legion passed was fundamentally anti-American.
All right. We got Dar Williams and Mark coming up right here on Morning's Edition. It's 27 past the hour.
Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
We're back. It's Morning's Edition. That's the music of Dar Williams. We're going to replay our interview and live performance with her in just a moment. I'm Dan Pashman, here with Brendan McDonald.
That's right.
And Mark Maron and Mark Riley will be back next Tuesday. We're going to have Cindy Sheehan live from Crawford, Texas in just a few minutes. And Brendan's also got a bone to pick with some people. He's going to get into it pretty soon in the show, Brendan.
Yeah, you know, I have a bone to pick with some people, and I also have a plea to everyone else
right.
to listen to what people say.
Yeah.
Because something was said on this program yesterday, and it was said very plainly, in very plain language, and it was perceived to mean something entirely different.
Right.
And it all surrounds a conversation we had about creationism. And we're going to get into that because there's also a poll out today about teaching creationism, and we want to get you the details on that just a few minutes. But first, we'll hear Dar Williams, who is a great singer-songstress out of the New England area. She came into this studio and performed a great song that we're going to listen to. And Mark, we're quite impressed with her. They want to have her back as soon as she gets back into New York to tour for her new album. So let's go right now to Mark and Mark, your favorites, along here with Dar Williams.
Rolling Stone magazine describes her as a feminine and as feminine and foul-mouthed. Wow, this is going to be exciting. She's a politically minded singer-songwriter with great pipes to boot. Her latest CD, My Better Self, comes out next month. Dar Williams joins us live in the studio this morning. Good morning, Dar.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Wow, that's feminine and foul-mouthed. What is that referring to?
Well, I remember an interviewer once said, you know, I said something really, you know, foul-mouthed. I said, well, don't put that in the interview. And she said, okay, wait a minute. You know, your whole thing is honesty, but you swear like a sailor. You're not a vegetarian, and you don't want anyone to know that. You know, you're straight, and nobody knows that. And she said, where does the honesty begin? And so I said, okay, fine, you can do it verbatim. And I was telling the Rolling Stone guy about that. And I am, I guess, pretty foul-mouthed.
You're foul-mouthed, you're not a vegetarian, and you're straight.
Yeah, these were some
I guess
surprises.
I lost a bet, Riley.
Yeah, sorry. I guess so. Here, pay up, man.
But one time I swore in front of an audience, and this very kind of hippie-ish person in the front row just shook her head like, no, man, that's not going to happen. You're not going to be a person who swears on stage. That's not going to happen in your career.
Yeah, she didn't actually say that. You just assumed that's what it meant.
Oh, that's a good point.
You read it that way. That was the voice.
Yeah, and I absolutely believed what I read.
Yeah, well, that's all right. So is this the new album? It's called My Better Self. Is this more personal or more political than usual? I don't know which way is that, My Better Self?
You know, it's probably both. Uh-huh. I think somebody pointed out, you know, that it's not really a pretentious title when you're a mother. You know, I have a 1-year-old, mm-hmm. you know, you just don't have time to polish your image.
Okay.
And so I really just assume that your better self is what kind of what comes out when you're not trying so hard.
And also, when you have a kid, I imagine you would think that your better self would come out. Not my mother,
yeah.
But I mean, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I hope that's the case.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Do you want to do a song from this record?
Sure. This is I'll do. One could argue that this is one of the political songs.
Okay.
This is called Empire.
Great.
Who's afraid of the sun? Who would question the goodness of the mighty? We who banish the threat. When your little ones all go nighty-nighty, well, there's no time for doubt right now and less time to explain. So get back on your horses, kiss my ring, join our next campaign, and the empire grows with a new that we're winning, with more fear to conquer and more gold thread for spinning, bright as the sun shining on everyone. Some would say that we forced our words, and we find that ingenuously churlish words are just words. Don't be so pessimistic, weak and girlish. We like strong, happy people who don't think there's something wrong with pride. Work makes them free, and we spread that freedom far and wide. And the empire grows the seeds of its glory. For every five tanks plant a sentimental story till they worship the sun. Even Christ loved them once. And we'll kill the terrorizers and a million of the racists. But when our people torture you, that's a few random cases. Don't question the sun, it doesn't help anyone. But the journalists cried out when it was too late to stop us. Everyone had awakened to the dream they could enter our colossus. Now I'm right, yeah, you said I'm right. There's nothing that can harm me, 'cause the sun never sets on my dungeons or my army. And the empire fell on its own splintered axis, and the emperor wanes as the silver moon waxes, and the farmers will find old coins in their strawberry fields. While somebody somewhere twists his ring, someone kneels. Oh, where is the sun shining for everyone? Oh, where is the sun shining for everyone?
Dar Williams,
very nice.
That's a
very
song,
nice.
Empire. What a beautiful, powerful song. What inspired that? Was there a singular event?
No, there was no singular event. But you know, it was, it's probably passing by the History Channel or something when you suddenly recognize your present era. When you're watching something and you realize that, I mean, I think I had one thought, and that was the beginning of the song, which is that if you're really dedicated to expanding, the price you pay is your own civilization. That's the coffers you have to raid, and that's what I saw in other civilizations, and I just went back in history and didn't really need to comment on any present time.
Great song. The new CD, My Better Self, comes out next month. If you want some info on tour dates and on, I imagine, on Dar Williams herself, you can go to darwilliams.com. That was a sweet song. I really appreciate you coming down.
Yeah.
It was great hearing you, great talking to you.
Thank you.
That was Dar Williams with Mark and Mark, who will be back next week. And Dar Williams, A fan of the show, actually. A fan of Air America.
Totally. She came in and she knew all our characters. She was already a Big Mornings Edition fan.
She might be listening right now. Hi, Dar.
Hey, Dar.
And we thank her for coming in, and we thank you for listening. You're listening to myself, Brendan McDonald, and Dan Pashman here, filling in for Mark and Mark, who will be back next week. And in just a few minutes, we're going to get into something that we talked a little bit about yesterday, and we still got some legs on.
That's right.
Especially because there's a poll out today talking about what Americans think of teaching creationism in public schools. The results are very surprising.
They are. Brendan McDonald may blow his stack in the next segment, so you're going to want to stick around for that.
All right. We'll be right back with that. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. It's 42 past the hour.
Hi, this is Lawton Smalls, Morning Sedition's Planet Bush Bureau Chief. Remember, you can't spell Lawton without W. Deal with it. You're listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Seven past the hour, Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Dan Pashman with Brendan McDonald and Chris Lopresto. We're filling in for Mark Maron and Mark Riley until they return on Tuesday. Do the evolution, Brendan.
Do the evolution, baby.
We're going to have Cindy Sheehan live from Crawford, Texas for the last time in just a few minutes. But right now, we got to deal with some people. We got to deal with some issues revolving around the issues of evolution and creationism. And we're going to set some people straight, Brendan.
Well, you know, we think that, but I'm not necessarily sure that that's true, because we have this poll sitting in front of us that says something very interesting, you know, because we were talking yesterday about how people have been taking roadside dinosaurs in places like Pensacola, Florida, and out in California,
right,
and they are turning them into evolution museums, creationism museums, saying that dinosaurs and the Bible go hand in hand, and using these big roadside dinosaurs as ways to lure people in to teach them about creationism. Well, you know, I kind of went off on this yesterday, and I got very exasperated over the fact that, you know, evolution is no longer a debate, and it's very silly that we should, you know, bring this debate up again. And then what do I know? I'm looking in the TV guide, and I see this thing on Nova to be airing on PBS, which we know PBS has been commandeered by the Republicans.
Right.
The people in charge there are trying to push out the old and push in the new being a kind of right-wing dominated PBS. And check out this special. We have a commercial for it, the special that's going to air on Nova.
Let there be light. And there was light. Join PBS for a new six-part science series on Nova. The creation, day by day.
You see, God created everything in like 6 days. Then he rested, see? He was tired. If everything had just evolved, why would he be so tired?
The creation, day by day. On the fifth day, God created the creatures of the sea and every living thing, even the dinosaurs. Which only lived for 2 hours.
Probably the hardest part for God was creating the firmament. Initially, God thought the heavens would go beneath the firmament, but that proved unwieldy. So he tinkered with it, flipped the plans over, and saw that it was good.
Nova's six-part series, The Creation, Day by Day. From the first day when the earth was void and without form, to the sixth day when Adam named the animals.
You, I will call Canis Familiaris. Or maybe Doggy. Come here, boy.
Who's a good boy? Who's a good boy?
Ow, what the f***? Eve, I'm bleeding! I'm bleeding! Oh, my God! Sorry.
The creation, day by day, only on Nova, only on PBS. And stay tuned for Austin City Limits. This week, Tom DeLay redistricts.
Oh, man, Tom DeLay's going to gerrymander Austin City Limits?
Man, PBS has really changed. Well, the Republican Party operatives took it over.
If Nova says it, though, I don't know. But, you know, we laugh about this, Dan, and then I see this poll today that initially I almost just left the building because I thought, well, I live in Crazy Town.
Yeah, seriously.
This planet has turned Crazy Town. That poll released today found that nearly two-thirds, 64% of Americans, say that creationism should be taught alongside evolution in public schools. The poll found that 42% of the respondents held strict creationist views, saying that all living things existed in their present form since the beginning of time. So that mitigated it a little. They said, okay, it's 42%. It's not a full majority. This is what really got me. John Green, senior fellow at the Pew Forum, this was a Pew poll, said that he was surprised to see that teaching both evolution and creationism was favored not only by conservative Christians, but also by majorities of secular respondents, liberal Democrats, and those who accept the theory of natural selection. This was what Green was quoted as saying. He said, it's like they're saying, some people see it this way, some see it that way, so let's just teach it all and let the kids figure it out. It seems like a nice compromise. See, this is what happens when you tolerate things that are wrong. I mean, it's not a compromise, dude. We already were through this debate.
Right.
I mean, what, do we got to teach both sides of gravity?
Right.
We got to teach both sides of the planets being aligned? These are things that were proven by science already. We don't need to go back. And I'm all for revisiting scientific studies, but you don't revisit them with the things that you already struck down. Look, if we want to debate things like, you know, what are things that we can debate, Dan?
The Atkins diet.
Sure. We don't know the real results of that yet.
Right. Do cell phones cause brain cancer?
That's a good thing for science to debate. Let's see both sides of those things. But, you know, and I don't know why there's this idea that creationism is needed to balance evolution. There's nothing in evolutionary theory that doesn't allow for the existence of God. In fact, yesterday, I believe I was quite clear in taking these crazy creationists to task for equating evolution with atheism. It's not right. If you believe that God is the creator of all things, then there's no reason why you can't believe that God set the evolutionary process into motion many millions of years ago. I mean, that is unless you are a literal interpreter of the Bible, and if that's the case, then we shouldn't even bother having this conversation. You see, in your mind, you've already won, since there's nothing I can say that has any kind of authority over the words in the Bible. And in my mind, your logic is quite suspect, because you literally believe everything the Bible says, like that the earth cannot be moved and does not revolve around the sun. That's in Psalms 82, 93, and 96. And Isaiah chapter 11, which says that the world is flat. Are we going to have to look at both sides of that argument too, Dan?
That's right.
And no matter what kind of logical loops people want to jump through, there are no dinosaurs in the Bible. Not a one. Yes, there are references to dragons, as translated from the Hebrew word tanim, which would actually more closely translate to sea monster. So then why are the creationists so quick to say that the book of Job is referring to an, at the time, unnamed dinosaur, when they could easily suppose that it's a reference to, say, a large iguana, which are indigenous to the region, or a crocodile, which just so happened to be the symbol on Roman coins and the emblem of Egypt at the time? As Dan says, just because you want the word to literally mean dinosaur doesn't make it true. But, you know, this kind of getting off the topic a little. The sad thing about all of this is the way the religious right has framed the discussion so that whenever you say anything critical about religion at all, it's assumed immediately that you're against all religion. And that offends me, because there are a lot of people very close to me that consider religion to be a big part of their lives. There's a Roman Catholic nun and a Roman Catholic deacon in my immediate family. One of them happens to be my father, and I'll let you guess which one. But religion is what makes up a good portion of their personalities, and I would never want them to be any different than the people that they are. And if we're sitting here acknowledging the relief effort in this hurricane, we need to acknowledge all the assistance that's going to come from religious groups. And yet, although I have these feelings, the right has done a great job in making me out to be a godless heathen just because I support evolution and because I said so on this broadcast. And we have proof from that from yesterday. Isn't that right, Dan?
That's right, Brandon. You know, we went to such great pains in our conversation yesterday to make it clear that we were not talking about all people of faith, that we were not talking about all people who believe in God, that we were only talking about a small, specific, extremist group of Christians that represent a small percentage of American of the American people. And a good friend of mine was angry yesterday. She told me that she thought that during our show yesterday that we were offensive, that we had attacked religion, that we had attacked religious people, and that is a victory for the right. When they make it sound like either you're with them, you're with the extreme right-wing religious fanatics, or you're an atheist. When they set up a situation where you must be one of those two things, then they have won. And it's very disheartening to think that our own listeners don't even listen closely enough to what we say. We put that same disclaimer on this conversation all the time, and people do not listen.
Mark Maron does it all the time. He says, look, I'm not speaking about all people of faith, but there are some people that take religion to an extreme, and they try to enforce their beliefs on other people. And we get calls from just moderate people who say, you know, I have religious beliefs, and I don't like what you said. And, you know, we didn't say that. And this is very similar to Tom DeLay getting up there and saying, this is a war against people of faith.
Right.
In the judiciary. I mean, they create these absolutes that then have people saying, wow, well, they said something about religion. That must mean that they don't like all religion.
Exactly. And it's maddening for us, especially because, you know, we expect that kind of asinine, knee-jerk reaction from conservatives. But when we get it from our own listeners, it's especially frustrating. We were flooded with emails yesterday, people complaining, saying that we were bashing religion. And we weren't. And we do not bash religion on this show. We support all people of all faiths, but there are a small number of extremists who are extremely dangerous and have a disproportionate amount of power in the country right now and are out to get more power. And they want to eliminate the teaching of evolution. They want to teach only creationism, even though evolution is proven, unequivocal, undisputed scientific fact.
Right. And you know, I said it yesterday and I'll say it again. I am done tolerating that.
Right.
I will not tolerate things that are stupid and wrong. And when it's stupid and wrong and other people tolerate it, it lets it pervade the culture until we get the situation that we have now where people say, well, you can't say anything about religion because that means you're anti-religion. We can't have that in this country, and I won't tolerate it. What we will have is Cindy Sheehan in her last day at Crawford, Texas, and that's right around the corner here on Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Good morning, everybody. It is 6 past the hour, Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Happy hump day to all of you. Wednesday's hump day, as you guys know. It's Brendan McDonald here with me. How are you, Brendan?
Good morning.
Chris Lopresto is here. We're going to have Cindy Sheehan live from Crawford, Texas in just one moment. We're also going to be playing some exclusive REM music, not released, slipped to us by his manager shortly. But before we get to Cindy Sheehan, Brendan, we want to update people on the latest out of the Gulf Coast and the aftermath of the hurricane.
Right, and New Orleans is looking like ground zero right now in this situation, which we actually didn't think it was going to be because the hurricane was to the east.
Right.
Now we're just, it's mind-boggling to think that if that city took the direct hit, if that storm was a couple, you know, almost 100 miles to the west, it would have destroyed all of New Orleans, because right now we are seeing 80% of a city underwater, water still rising in Crescent City with no way out. And unfortunately, we are getting reports of lootings and a shooting of a New Orleans police officer, which is devastating, terrible news. New Orleans Mayor Nagin has said that the biggest problem has been the failure to patch the levees, which are leaking and slowly seeping water into the entire city. Also, now we know that patients are being airlifted. People who are in critical and desperate need of medical attention are being airlifted. All shelters are being evacuated because the governor of Louisiana said everybody needs to be out of New Orleans.
Yeah.
How they're going to do that, we don't know. We don't know how they're going to get the full capacity of people to get out of this city that is flooded at 80% right now. They are also evacuating all of those emergency shelters, including the Superdome, where a few thousand people are holed up. That's going to take place over the next 2 days, and they are still not sure exactly how and where all these people are going to go. Also, we don't want to understate the amount of destruction that's happened in Alabama and Mississippi. More than 100 dead in one county in Mississippi alone. That's Harrison County, home to Biloxi. And we also know that the death toll is just, it's too early to tell exactly what it is. And this story will continue to be sad and get worse as we know the full extent of the damage. The real way that we can contribute is by sending money to the Red Cross, 1-800-HELP-NOW.
That's right. We send our best wishes out to those people again. 1-800-HELP-NOW is that number. Right now, we want to go ahead and bring on our guest. This is her last day in Crawford, Texas, before she heads to Tom DeLay's district on the Bring Them Home Now bus tour. She joins us one last time from Crawford, Texas. Cindy Sheehan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm okay. That's really awful news.
Yeah, it's a sad story that's going to keep getting sad as we hear more news out of it. And we'll just continue to monitor it here on Air America. I know that we've also been monitoring your situation out there for the past month, Cindy. Mm-hmm. And as it winds down, I guess the first thing that we want to know from you is, you know, what was the cumulative effect in your mind of this past month, not only on yourself, but on America?
Well, on myself, it really transformed my life, you know. And I'm not exaggerating, but... you know, I came here just, I felt like a failure. I felt so, I didn't have any hope for our future, for the future of the country, you know, and now I do. I see that America really cares. I see that America is ready to reclaim our country back, and that just gave me so much hope and so much encouragement. And because, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. I've been doing this since my son died, and it doesn't seem like anything was working or having much of an effect, you know. And I was just getting so discouraged, and, you know, this Camp Casey experience has really given me hope for my future and hope for the future of the country. And now, instead of being angry and bitter, I'm still angry, and I probably will be for the rest of my life. I mean, my son was killed for absolutely no reason. You know, I'm not going to see his children. I'm not going to see his grandchildren. You know, he's not going to fulfill his destiny of, you know, being a living, breathing, you know, wonderful human being that contributes to society. But, you know, just looking at his death and what it has brought this country, and it's brought this country much closer to peace. And so I'm just really grateful to everybody at Camp Casey and people like you guys for restoring my hope for humanity and for the future.
You know, Cindy, it strikes me just now as I'm listening to you, you've been asking for so long, what is the noble cause?
Uh-huh.
What is the noble cause that my son died for? And I think you may have just put your finger on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is a noble cause, the noble cause of peace.
Right, exactly. And that's what Casey would want to be remembered for. And I thank everybody for helping me make this possible. It's great.
Well, what do you think was the reason that, you know, you said that you had a kind of hopelessness and despair, the fact that you'd been fighting and you'd been doing this and nothing was really building any momentum. What do you think it was that allowed in this kind of sleepy August with hot weather and people on vacation to kind of capture people's attention and say, wait a minute, we don't agree with this war. We are supporters of peace.
Well, it's not only they don't agree with the war. They don't agree with George Bush. You know, just looking at his poll numbers and the numbers on the war and how he's handling it, a majority of Americans were already there. The movement was already in place.
Which, by the way, Cindy, you have better poll numbers than he does.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this, Cindy. You know that you've hit it. Here's your last day in Crawford. You have officially hit the big time when you are the subject of a poll question.
I know.
And we have it here today. Approval ratings on Iraq, Cindy Sheehan, 53%. George W. Bush, 37%.
And that's just one of those things that says, well, Cindy Sheehan does speak for me. You know, like this kind of movement of wanting to say that you don't speak for anyone else but yourself. Well, obviously, other people are going to share your opinion, and that's probably been the reason that everyone has been looking down to Crawford for this past month, is that they said, hey, there are people that agree with me, and I don't have to be silent about this anymore. There's this woman right there. I'm going to talk about her.
Uh-huh. And that's what, you know, that's just what it was. People I go all over the country, and the last question I get is always, what can we do, Cindy?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first day I was here, after I, you know, had spent the first night under the stars in a lawn chair, I did the Wolf Blitzer show. And his producer here in Crawford told me, you know, Cindy, your timing is perfect. There's nothing going on. And I looked at her and I said, what do you mean? This is August 7th, and over 30 of our troops have already been killed in Iraq. I said, what do you mean nothing's going on? Try to tell those families that nothing is going on in the world. And she goes, yeah, but you know what I mean. And I said, no, actually I don't. Mm. this is what has been good about Camp KC too. It's put the war back on the front pages and back in as a first story of the news where it should be.
Right. Well, I want to give credit to Jerry Springer for bringing this quote to my attention, is that he said, we can go anywhere in this country, and this was about 3 months ago he said this, we can go anywhere in this country and walk the streets of America and not realize that there is a horrible, horrendous war going on.
Right.
And I said it the other day, and I know that you are not looking for thanks for what you did, but I thank you for helping bring that to the country's attention. I know that there are a lot of other people who thank you because they felt the same way, that they were screaming, pay attention, and no one was paying attention, and I think that now we are.
Yeah. I was one of those people, you know, and I thought my son gave his life for this country, and absolutely nobody cared. You know, now I know that's false. We had like 3,000 people at Camp KC on Saturday, and we've had over 10,000 come through, and how many thousands and thousands were at the vigils, and how many thousands behind that who just don't have the opportunity. So I know we here at Camp KC speak for the majority of Americans.
It's true, Cindy, and I just want to add, you know, I think I speak for most of our listeners, you know, when we say how that you have really inspired a lot of people and you have really galvanized a lot of people. It's unfortunate that we don't have any elected politicians, Democrats, who are able to take the lead on an issue like this in the same way that you have, but we all really appreciate it, and we wish you nothing but the best going forward.
And it goes on, right, Cindy? What's
right.
The next stop? Where exactly?
Well, we're going to Tom DeLay's office. Today we're going to Austin to do a rally, and then tomorrow we're going to go to Tom DeLay's office. And I think also another thing that the Camp KC movement is going to do, it's going to give backbone to those Democrats.
Yes.
Who have been
so
silent on the issue, who have been so weak on the issue, and that's what we're going to do. We're taking Camp KC to Congress now, not letting up on the president, who I understand might finally be, realize that we did have a devastating hurricane.
Yeah, he jumped into action about 3 days late. But,
and, you know, that's just like what he did on the tsunami. But, you know, and also it's hard. It's going to be even harder to recover because most of Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana's National Guard are in Iraq.
Right,
and
right.
All their equipment is in Iraq, and, you know, that is just devastating.
And the money, Cindy, I mean,
right.
what that war is costing mm-hmm. every day. We've had those numbers here all morning, $186 million a day. So it's great that you're going to take this right to the steps of Congress. You're going to be in Washington, and we've heard that you're going to be there for the big protest march on Washington on the 24th of September. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Well, we will see you there.
Yeah, we have very exciting news for you, Cindy. We'll be releasing the details in coming days. Morning's Edition is going to be broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. on that Friday morning, September 23rd. And we hope that maybe you can come join us in person for our live broadcast. We'd love
Absolutely.
To meet you in person.
Absolutely. That would be great.
All right. Well, Cindy, thanks again. Be well. We'll be in touch.
Yeah, get some rest finally.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
Go to sleep.
Yeah, sleep until 7:30 tomorrow.
Okay. I love you guys. I love your listeners. And it's not over yet.
All right.
Thanks, Cindy. Take care.
Bye-bye.
That was Cindy Sheehan for the full month of August doing something amazing and proving to America that one person can make a difference.
I was just going to say the exact same thing, Brendan. I mean, I know that it's a cliche to say it, you know, but she really has changed. The past month, the way Americans think about the war in Iraq and the president and his policies surrounding the war in Iraq has changed. There has been a sea change, and we have Cindy Sheehan to thank.
And a great thing, too, I think it has exposed the thing that is the elephant in the room, that everybody knows that these guys, that their defense is to attack people.
Right.
And this is the first time that people people saw it and kind of recoiled from it and said, whoa, you're smearing this veteran's mother?
Who lost her son?
That doesn't seem right. I'm obviously upset that it took that long for people to realize that, but if it did happen, I'm glad that they did do those smears so that people could see what lowlifes they are.
It really is true. I mean, they have no class, and it was disgraceful what they did to her, but as you said, at least it shed some light on some of their despicable practices. So thanks again to Cindy Sheehan. We hope to see her in D.C. when we're there on the 23rd of September. Coming up next, folks, we are going to rock out here in the studio. R.E.M.'s manager slipped us a copy of their unreleased song, Permanent Vacation. You can guess who's been on a permanent vacation for the past few weeks and continues in a permanent vacation from reality, who helped to inspire this song. It's a pretty hard rock song. It really drives. And we're going to be playing an extended chunk of that song, exclusive, unreleased R.E.M. material here on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. It's 20 past the hour.
Hola, this is Pendejo, the revolutionary, and Stompers, my Shih Tzu, who cannot be left alone. You're listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
The hour, Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald.
I'm psyched. R.E.M., man.
Damn straight. We're in for Mark and Mark. They'll be back next week. Right now, we got something very exciting. You know you're badass when the managers of major rock bands slip you advanced copies of their music.
Yeah.
We here at Morning Sedition and Air America Radio have officially been deemed badass.
We arrived, man.
As of today, we got an advanced copy of R.E.M.'s brand new song, Permanent Vacation, which is pretty clearly a reference to our noble president who has been on a permanent vacation, if not from the White House, at least from reality.
And apparently he, quote, ended his vacation yesterday, and that's why this makes this song even more appropriate, because we know the real deal with this guy. He's never ending any vacation.
That's right. So let's hear this new song right now, Chris. Hit it.
I could take it with me and leave you all behind. I got some kind of feeling burning out my mind. Sleep late in the morning, stay out all night long. Every day is like the one before. I'm going wrong. I'm on a permanent vacation, nothing left to lose. I want a revelation, nothing left to prove. I can take that with me and leave you all behind. I got some kind of feeling burning in my mind. There's only one thing you can do, but it's like I do. I got nothing to win, nothing to lose. Nothing you do.
R.E.M., brand new music here on Air America Radio. Not only do you get the latest in politics, the latest in the news, and some great comedy, we're debuting music that you can't get anywhere else. That's R.E.M.'s brand new song, Permanent Vacation, not available anywhere yet, but they slipped us a copy because we like them and they like us.
Yeah, it's very cool when you see an email in your inbox,
right.
MP3, from R.E.M.'s manager saying, this might go well with the president being in Crawford.
Totally.
You know, that was a good feeling.
Pretty cool. And that was not the whole song. We can't play the whole song because we like R.E.M., we're friends with them, we don't want to be giving their music out for free. You know, that's a sensitive issue. But that was a pretty big chunk of it. You got a pretty good feeling for it. Kind of a return to some old school R.E.M. in many ways. They were not holding back
also,
on the guitar there.
Big drums in there, which we haven't heard since I guess their last album with a drummer was New Adventures in Hi-Fi.
Right.
And they had a drum machine after that. Very very exciting. I'm pumped now.
Yeah.
I'm pumped for more rock and roll.
Damn straight.
Because we got Rob Zombie.
That's right.
The former frontman of White Zombie and his own solo projects. And
right.
He directed the movie that I actually think was the most underrated movie of the summer, The Devil's Rejects.
Right.
Which was a very cool, subversive little movie that got disguised as a slasher flick. Well, he was in to talk with Mark and Mark. We're going to play that for you coming up. And we'll put a little closure on some of the issues we talked about on the show today. The hurricane, the poverty rates, and
creationists.
All right, this is Morning Sedition. It is 27 past the hour. I'm Brendan. This is Dan. This is Morning Sedition. I don't
know. Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Only 8 days till football season starts. Only 11 days till it starts in earnest. And that's when the New York football Giants take the field. I got the drunken salami marinating as of yesterday.
Dan
I'm ready
Passman,
for opening
can you
day.
Tell people what drunken salami is?
Oh, yes. Drunken salami, you take Hebrew National, kosher salamis, poke holes in them, and you marinate them in 50% Russian dressing, like old school, like Russian dressing, like the syrupy stuff, not Thousand Island, which is also called Russian dressing in New York. 50% Russian dressing, 50% scotch, marinated for 2 weeks, grill it up. That stuff is awesome. We'll get into more detail on that later on this Friday. We're going to have a football guy in the show. The three of us and that guy, we're going to talk football. We're going to give our football predictions for the season. We're all pumped. But it is 35 past the hour. This is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. I'm Dan Passman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald.
Good morning,
we're filling
everybody.
In for Mark Maron and Mark Riley. They'll be back on Tuesday. Until then, we're holding down the fort. We're reporting the news of the day, having some fun, and also mixing in some best of Mark and Mark clips from some of the best comedy bits and interviews of the past few weeks. And we got another one of those right now, Brendan.
Yeah.
We definitely do. It
there,
is
Riley.
It is Rob Zombie, who you're hearing right now with White Zombie. This is the first song that put them on the map. It was also, it's near and dear to my heart because it was the theme song for the old ECW wrestling television show.
Okay.
So I'm very happy to hear that again blasting over our airwaves. And then Rob Zombie, he was in here to talk about The Devil's Rejects, which I actually went to see and was very surprised at what an inventive movie it was. Now, I don't want to tell everyone to rush out and see it because it is not for everyone.
Right.
It is a bloody, vulgar film. But for what it is, it does it better than all the standard kind of by-the-numbers slasher picks that come out. I just to put it into perspective, the family in this movie is called the Firefly family, and they all have names, first names. This is a serial killer family, by the way. They all have first names that are taken from Groucho Marx's characters in movies. And so the police that are tracking them hire a film critic to come with them on the hunt for these guys, to try to profile them because they are doing stuff that the Marx Brothers did in their movies.
Man.
I mean, Rob Zombie, which we'll find out from this interview, is kind of a big nerd.
Right.
He used to work on Pee-wee's Playhouse. He's worked as a production assistant on many films. He's got this kind of encyclopedic knowledge of movies. And that it becomes very true not only in the movie The Devil's Reject, but in this interview right here with Mark and Mark, Rob Zombie, who was in our studio just last month.
All right, man. So I watched a film, and you definitely get the feel of one of those sort of 70s weird speed freak movies with the kind of Manson Cult County slasher flicks thing. You know, which is the one, you know, I'm talking about? Which is the one that really inspired you?
You know, it's funny. It's like all that stuff really inspired me from the 70s because everything to me had that kind of feel. I mean, it didn't matter if you were watching Last House on the Left or Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
Everything had a really
raw.
Just felt dirty.
Yeah. Last House on the Left definitely felt
dirty.
I remember the movie theater I saw that.
Yeah.
It was on 42nd Street.
And you came out of it probably feeling kind of bad about yourself, didn't you?
Yeah.
But that was a different reason.
Well, you feel dirty. You know, that is true. And then you used B actors, I guess, for that reason. So, because you can't expect, like, great actors to act like that. Only certain people can act like that.
Well, I think all these actors are great actors. They're just typecast. And
right.
I think that what bores me about a lot of mainstream actors is they're more concerned with their sort of like off-screen persona.
Yeah,
and
right.
And they've stopped being actors and they've started being celebrities.
Right.
And you would think the whole point of being an actor is to dig in and do these extreme roles, which, I mean, great actors like, you know, De Niro would do. But then now it's just like, well, it might hurt the readership of Us Weekly. if I do something like demented, and it's just boring.
And if they get dirty, and they'll make a big press deal out of it, and it's a big deal to get them. You couldn't get like a mainstream actor to act as dirty as you get some of these people.
Well, it's
act.
Funny. Some people will. I mean, if you saw the movie California with Brad Pitt, to me, that's when he was his most compelling.
Yeah.
In that movie.
So I was looking at the credits of the film. You actually had the guy who played Jason in the Friday the 13th movie as stunt coordinator?
That's his main thing in life. That's really what he does.
His name's Kane Hodder?
Kane Hodder, yeah. Oh.
And is there a different way of approaching stunts in a movie like this as opposed to any other movie? Or?
Well, I mean, no. I mean, you know, obviously it's safety first, and he does a lot of big movies. But the way we wanted to approach it was, I said, make the fight scenes look clumsy. Because fight scenes in movies always looks like suddenly everyone's an expert boxer
or dancer
or fighter. Yeah, they're so you know, graceful. And I was like, there's one big fight scene in the middle of the movie and no one even throws a punch because they're too busy like tripping and, you know, like
falling.
If you see a real fight, it usually ends up with two guys in the gutter rolling around and one guy hits another guy with a trash can.
Yeah.
That's basically what a fight looks like. It's guys sparring like they're like in the gym.
Yeah, no one ever gets a shot in. It's just chaos and it's usually embarrassing.
One guy trips over something and the other guy starts kicking him in the head. That's basically how most fights go.
You've obviously had a movie career and music career. You really controlled your music career in terms of the marketing, in terms of the White Zombies persona. Did you have to cede any control at all in making films?
Well, the first film that I made, House of a Thousand Corpses, was trickier because, you know, you don't have any kind of track record, so people are, you know how it goes. They hire you, and then they suddenly don't trust you. And you're like, well, why did you hire me? Well, we can't answer that question, you know. But with the second film, since... Of course, the first movie made somebody a lot of money, so now with the second film, they sort of took on a, like, if it's not broken, we're not going to try to fix it attitude, which is actually refreshing because that's not usually the case. You know, it's usually like, let's hire you and change every single thing about you that we think we hired you for in the first place.
When you were making this movie, was ever a point where you're like, you know, we've got too much money to make this look like the movie I want to make it look like?
Having too much money was never a problem that we suffered from, though.
Because I would think that when Tobe Hooper made the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it looks like he made it for $10.
Yeah, which adds to it. I think that, you know, that's one of my problems with movies, too, is they look too slick. They're so slick they never feel real. They're like, there was this heightened reality. In 70s movies, everybody looks real, like a lot of available light. And now it's like everything is like glamour lighting on every character. Everybody's standing in the best possible light they could ever stand in. It doesn't matter if it's dark and they're on a street corner.
Yeah.
Some glamour lighting hitting them just right.
Now, also, I was told that you were an illustrator for porno magazines.
Yeah, I did that for a long time.
Which magazines?
Well, you know when you see a big rack of magazines, it's Playboy,
yeah,
and then it goes to Penthouse, then Hustler,
yeah,
and then you get way down to the bottom, and there's all those ones. Like, who would buy those?
Yeah.
Those are the ones.
Those are the ones.
Yeah.
And you did cartoons or just illustrations?
Well, the way it would work is that I would do all the paste-up and design of all the porno content, but if they had one, I think it was some kind of trick where if you had one legitimate article, you could get newsstand distribution and not just like porn house distribution. So it was up to me to illustrate this fake real article about, you know, how to sleep on an airplane, or, you know, vegetables are good for you. And just be in the middle of, like, you know, all the anal shots, suddenly this article about nothing.
Yeah.
And that was my job to illustrate.
Vitamins.
That.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Now,
can you exercise too much?
Too much, yeah, right.
You know,
one
of those things.
You've done two horror flicks. Will number three also be horror, or are you thinking about branching out?
I'll do something different. I mean, these two films are sort of interconnected, so the third film will be something totally different.
What are you looking at?
I got a script now that's like a kind of a dark comedy, very dark.
Like, but this one was pretty funny.
It had funny moments, but this one, but this other movie's not violent or anything.
Thanks for joining us, man. It's good talking to you.
Thanks for having
me.
Right on.
I'm very bothered by the fact that I called Rob Zombie a big dork before we went to that interview. I'm worried for myself that he's going to, like, put my effigy in a pentagram or something and, you know, cause a curse.
Yeah, you wouldn't be the first.
It would actually be an honor.
Yeah.
I like Rob Zombie.
It's like a rite of passage for Rob Zombie.
Right. Well, we will, as we've been doing all week, have more with Mark and some of our best guests from the past few weeks and months.
Tomorrow we're going to replay the Dick Cavett interview. We had TV legend Dick Cavett in studio with a phenomenal interview.
Which
is
amazing. We'll also probably, I think we should tell some of the stories of behind the scenes when Dick Cavett was here.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's like, he's just kind of like a classic, legendary guy.
Right.
And the his, I guess, gravitas that he brought in here led to some very funny moments that happened off mic. So we'll share those with you tomorrow. We're going to share with you right now the number 3. What does that mean, 3? Well, it means 3 with a dollar sign in front of it is what you could be purchasing gas for per gallon at the pump this Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
$3 a gallon. And you know what, Dan? It's very interesting because that came in last night, that news. We had it ready for this morning's show. And then what do we find out just a few hours ago? That the president is going to okay tapping the Strategic Oil Reserve here in America and get some emergency oil, as they put it in quotes, out to the American public. Isn't that convenient when we're getting ready to see headlines blaring, $3 gallon of gas on Labor Day, that we're also going to now see a sub-headline that says president to tap Strategic Oil Reserve now.
Right.
You know.
It's important to understand what's really going on here. Bush's approval ratings are plummeting. The price of oil is a huge issue for average working Americans, and Bush knows it. He has had the chance to tap this reserve for months. He has been pressured to do it for months, and he has not done it because oil companies don't like when you tap the oil reserve. It helps them to have a high price of oil. One of the Saudis from OPEC last week said there's no reason the price should be this high. There's plenty of oil. The only reason the price is so high is because oil companies can get this much. But Bush now has an excuse. He is using the hurricane as an excuse to tap the reserve so he doesn't have to admit that he's only doing it because he does not want to see those $3 a gallon headlines push his approval ratings down further.
Right. If you read between the lines of the poll we got today from AP Ipsos that we talked about with Cindy Sheehan saying that her approval ratings are better than President Bush's.
Much better.
That poll, reading between the lines there, it's really because of oil. This country has had it, which, you know, that stands alone, that the Iraq war has been raging on for 3 years, coming up on 3 years, and what really gets people's goat is the fact that they got to pay $3 at the gas pump.
Well, and of course, you know, one of the many lies we were told before this war was that the oil we would get out of Iraq would pay for the reconstruction on its own. This just in, the Iraq war is costing American taxpayers $129,000 per minute.
I'm sorry, Dan, you just burped on air.
I think I did.
I lost it. All right.
I was eating chicken salad wrap in the break. A little bit came back.
There's no way to fully get through. Like, I mean, we are trying to make points here.
I'm trying to be serious.
Right. President Bush is tapping the oil.
In all fairness, Brendan, you had a completely bizarre noise come out of you mid-sentence earlier in the show.
That was a strange one. And you were much more professional than I was. You let that go. You didn't say anything, but I was laughing too hard.
Well, we're
right
just
there.
A couple of basket cases. Yesterday, I had a nosebleed on the air.
Right. I wasn't able to get back on the mic before I was done laughing, so I'm sorry for tipping that. And I just wanted, before we go here, and we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're kind of going to wrap up what we talked about earlier with this whole creationism debate. But right. I wanted to point out to owners of 1999 to 2002 Chevrolet Avalanches, Silverados, Tahoes, or GMC Sierras, Yukons, or Yukon XL. Please send them back because they are death traps.
Right.
GM has recalled 800,000 sport utility vehicles and pickups because of undisclosed problem with the anti-lock brake system. They said it's corrosion, but that can mean many things.
Right.
These are in, I'll read off the list real quick. Connecticut, Illinois, Indiana, Maine, Massachusetts, Michigan, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont, and West Virginia. And you know that it's a big problem, Dan, when they recall 800,000 of them, because these companies, especially GM, which is the largest automaker in the world, they will not recall a vehicle if they have done the cost-benefit analysis and says the cost of someone dying in that vehicle and paying out the families of the people who died is less than the recall. They will just let that happen.
That's
so
right.
This could, you know, you could have killed 800,000 families, which is why they're recalling them now.
It's true. I mean, the fact is that recalls like this cost a lot of money, and clearly GM has decided that while it costs a lot, it doesn't cost as much as paying out from those lawsuits. And it's important to note that large corporations like GM and many others and conservatives are pushing for what they call tort reform, or what we call restricting victims' rights, which is a way to stop ordinary average Americans from holding large corporations accountable when they release faulty products like these trucks that GM put out on the market, 800,000 of them. And there needs to be recourse for average Americans to hold corporations accountable, and there needs to be a way for corporations to be penalized. And conservatives and large corporations are pushing for tort reform, or restricting victims' rights, as we call it, in order to take away that recourse.
Couldn't have said it better in better burpless fashion, Dan.
And before we go to break, I just want to say one quick thing, because I burped in the middle of it. I've been reiterating the statistic all show long, $129,000 a minute. In fact, in the time that I burped, we spent about $1,000 in Iraq.
Right.
$129,000 per minute.
That's $186 million a day.
In Iraq. And we can't couldn't afford to fix the levees in New Orleans. We can't afford the proper care for our own citizens and for our own roads and schools here in America. And there's a heck of a lot of reasons. We can't afford to give the troops the proper armor that they need and the veterans the proper benefits when they come back. That money is going to contractors. That's going to big corporations. It's going to the people who build the weapons. And, you know, and we're standing up against that.
All right, well, we're gonna be back and land this thing. We're going to wrap up what we talked about. We'll give you the latest updates that we know from the Gulf Coast, and we're going to wrap up our conversation on creationism from early in the show. It's 49 past the hour. This is Morning Sedition. Dan and Brendan in for Mark and Mark. Good morning to you all.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the fuck up for 10 seconds?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Was light. Join PBS for a new six-part science series on Nova, the creation, day by day.
You see, God created everything in like 6 days. Then he rested. See, he was tired. If everything had just evolved, why would he be so tired?
The creation, day by day. On the fifth day, God created the creatures of the sea and every living thing. Even the dinosaurs, which only lived for 2 hours.
Probably the hardest part for God was creating the firmament. Initially, God thought the heavens would go beneath the firmament, but that proved unwieldy. So he tinkered with it, flipped the plans over, and saw that it was good.
Nova's six-part series, The Creation, Day by Day. From the first day when the earth was void and without form, to the sixth day when Adam named the animals.
You, I will call Canis Familiaris. Or maybe Doggy. Come here, boy.
Who's a good boy?
Who's a good boy? Ow, what the f***? Eve, I'm bleeding! I'm bleeding! Oh, my God! Sorry.
The creation, day by day, only on Nova, only on PBS. And stay tuned for Austin City Limits. This week, Tom DeLay redistricts.
Damn it! I can't believe they're going to gerrymander that show.
I know, seriously. It's 55 past the hour, Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. And before we go, Brendan, we got some more things to deal with on this issue of creationism.
That's right, Dan Pashman, because we all like that little bit and we chuckled at it. But there was this poll today that said that 64% of Americans said that creationism should be taught alongside evolution, as the president said. And that the results of this poll showed that it was a lot of people who said yes were secular respondents, liberal Democrats, and people who accept the theory of natural selection. The pollster who took this from the Pew Forum said it's like they're saying, quote, some people see it this way, some see it that way, so let's just teach it all and let kids figure it out. It seems like a nice compromise, but you know, it has been figured out already.
Right.
Like, we're not going to go back and put side by side whether or not the Earth is flat versus a globe that revolves around the sun. We're not putting those back to back. We're not going to check out both sides of the gravity debate. We're not going to check out both sides of whether the planets are in alignment.
Although there are some people who wouldn't mind if we did, I think. But
exactly.
No,
intelligent falling proponents.
Right. There are two very basic principles that need to be driven home here. Number one, you can believe in evolution and still be a person of faith.
Absolutely.
In fact, most people believe in evolution
and are people of faith.
So you are in the majority to believe in those two things. Those are not mutually exclusive. Number two, the other thing is that evolution is a proven fact. It is not open for debate. We are all for debating scientific issues that have not been decided, but evolution is not one of those issues.
Right. Now, also, before we go today, we want to give the number of 1-800-HELP-NOW, 1-800-HELP-NOW, which is the number to the Red Cross, and they need money because, as the Red Cross spokesman has said, this is going to be the biggest response to a natural disaster in the history of the American Red Cross as they deliver 500,000 meals a day to the victims of Hurricane Katrina. There is still flooding in New Orleans. They are evacuating that entire city. They are airlifting invalid patients out of rescue shelters. There is a lot of work that still needs to be done and a death count that we don't even know what the toll is. So we need to keep monitoring that situation and we need to keep assisting places like the Red Cross. 1-800-HELP-NOW is how you donate to the Red Cross. And we all need to do it. And we're going to be back here tomorrow to talk more about this. Right, Dan?
That's right, Brendan. We're also going to have some of Mark and Mark's best interviews from recent weeks. TV legend Dick Cavett and the authors of Why Do Men Have Nipples. Brendan and I will be back with Mark and Mark. It's Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.